Hello, everybody. Welcome to this week's edition of If You're Happy, Do You Know It? And we have a guest. Her name is Caroline Bridges. And she is just a great human. You're going to hear all about her. You're going to hear about what she thinks about happiness, how her job and big shift in career during her life has kept her kind of a buoyant and professional dude. Enjoy this episode. This is the show, by the way, we're on now. Welcome to the podcast arena, Caroline. What a nice surprise to have dinner now you're in Slough.
Yes, it was lovely. It was a lovely dinner.
I'm full up now.
I know, it's tasty.
I've eaten too much today. I had eaten too much today before we had dinner, and now I've eaten extra much. So, Caroline, you're a whirling...
Dervish.
Dervish of... multi-talented energy.
Mm, I don't know about that, but thank you.
You're a human being.
I'm a human being. I am.
You're a cinematographer. You're a dance teacher and a dancer. You're a mother. You're a Australian and Scottish and English. Stop showing off would be my first thing to say. Stop showing off at being so good at everything. Why are you so good at everything?
I would never consider myself. There's always room for improvement. I could definitely be a better Scottish person because obviously don't have the accent.
No.
Yes, mainly Australian with a bit of everything else in the genes, I guess.
So did you grow up in Australia? Yes. I think I know this, but the readers don't.
Yeah, so I was born in England.
Yeah.
And my parents emigrated when I was 6 months old to Australia because... basically, my parents are both scientists, and so they were living in Letchworth and couldn't afford to live in London even back then. Yeah. So Dad was commuting every day and thought I'd be awake only aged five when he'd see me.
Yeah.
So they decided to move for those kind of personal reasons, actually.
As far as they possibly could.
Yeah. I don't know why they chose Australia. It could have been anywhere.
Yeah.
But they did. And, so I grew up in Adelaide and went to primary, secondary and uni in Adelaide and then – in Australia. And then came over here. But I came over here as a professional dancer. So I did all my – my degree was in advanced performance in dance. And then I came over to the UK and to Europe and was working in dance theatre companies around for a while and then retrained via a very circuitous route.
Why did you retrain? Okay. Were you unhappy?
No, I wasn't. The theme. What was really weird about it was, so I saw Deviate Physical Theatre, for those of you who know about physical theatre companies. Some of you might know over there out there. So when I was a student, I saw Deviate perform in Australia. The Lloyd Newson is Australian, and some of his dancers were Australian in the company at the time. And I saw them perform, and in particular, I saw a man called Liam Steele perform, who I know now quite well. But I remember seeing him perform in Enter Achilles, and thought I would love to work with that guy one day. And then in my professional career, I worked with Motion House Dance Theatre for a number of years. And then Liam at that point had paired up with Rob Tanyan to make a company called Stan Won't Dance. And I auditioned and I got the job. So I did. I achieved career goal of working with Liam, who was directing and choreographing, and Rob as well. And so after that tour ended, it was kind of like, oh, okay.
Wow.
What do I do now? And it was actually quite a grieving process, I have to say, because it was, I could have kept going, you know, I could have kept dancing. But it was a very odd moment, I think I spent 10 days kind of in a sort of grieving period about, okay, I've done that, what do I do next kind of thing.
Yeah, now this is an interesting thing that I think is very real and happens to a lot of people, is that you have this like really singular goal and ambition, and there's a real danger of attaining it, because then you're like, fuck.
Yeah.
Now what am I going to do?
Yeah.
Because if that's your, like, if that's all you're going for, then it's like, if you get it, then everything you thought was your purpose, it just goes out the window.
Particularly, I think, for dancers as well, because your instrument is your body and your personality, and you know, it's a bit like acting, but more physical, obviously. So part of who it defines your identity a lot.
Yeah.
So it's not just a job; it's part of your character. It's part of your identity. So when you finish that, you kind of go, "Oh, okay." So I now have to redefine myself and find another way forward. I mean, I still choreograph, which is great, and I love doing that. I don't dance professionally anymore. But just having that little handle on it. So the last couple of days I've been rehearsing for a vocational dance degrees grad show at Sadler's Wells at the end of the week, and I love their I can see them and see their passion. They're about to go into the industry, and it makes me excited for them, and kind of regenerates my kind of love
that
as well, even though I'm now in a different
career
path.
I think there is something about these days people don't necessarily do. I think especially perhaps in, for want of a less wanky term, the creative arts. People don't necessarily go, I'm doing this one thing and that's me and I define myself by that. So I think it's interesting that you had that and now you've done a very different creative art. But I don't think there's any reason why you could say, but I don't, that's that I'm a different person now. So dipping into it occasionally should be more like, well, of course I would do that because I've got this whole like however many years of doing that.
It's nice to pass on the knowledge, and and I do really enjoy it because I get to see, you know, these young people develop as dancers, and that's really lovely. But I think, you know, even though they sound so like they come from completely different fields, cinematography and dance theatre are both very visual art forms. So in they're coming from a different angle, but they have very interesting similarities, and so the way, you know, the way I see things, which is natural obviously to everyone, it's the way we see it, as individuals see things, are second nature to ourselves, which seems sometimes quite left field to other people, but I think that's just for everybody, this would be true, ring true, is that your background obviously informs how you see the world, so
of course
but I think it has helped me a lot, particularly with the physicality of operating as an operating DP, like most of us are in this country.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
And do you think that kind of intrinsic choreography within you lends something to your style as a DP?
I definitely find it easier to operate when people are constantly moving. I've noticed this.
Right.
Because I find that I can instantly follow them.
Right.
A lot more easily than if someone is sitting in a chair and then suddenly stands.
Which sounds
so simple. And I love, you know, I love choreographing shots and the pathways of shots and how people can... You can pick up one person in a shot and then follow them for a bit and then follow another person, and it kind of intrinsically, you know, seamlessly follows.
Yeah.
I always call it like the ER kind of, in the day where you have those amazing choreographed shots in ER that go on forever and through corridors and through operating theatres and what have you. And, you know,
and they would have been doing that really to save loads of money.
Were they? I just loved it.
Because there's a big thing, I think, in American TV where they do have to save money because they've got to make 24 shows a series, And although there's a lot more money in American TV, there's still, you know, network budgets. They've still got to keep it moving. So I think that ER was one of the kind of pioneering shows where they were like, we've got to keep the energy up and keep it kinetic, but we haven't got time to be doing loads of coverage going this way and that and everything. Mm-hmm. So if we can get people moving in that choreographed motion, you can capture a lot. I think Grey's Anatomy do it now. They're the hospital drama that does it, where it's like there's lots of walk and talks, and then you can cross and go straight into another scene without, and you can get a lot done in one sort of long steady cam setup and everything.
I think it's beautiful. Yeah. I much prefer that dynamism of the urgency of that, you know, when things are, you know, rushing on gurneys through here and then, you know, I think that the way they choreograph those and the timing of that, the timing of everything coming together in a seamless, beautiful moment like that is quite incredible.
Yeah.
And it's a lot like dance.
Yeah, it must be. I think that's something that you can bring to it. So when you thought, right, I'm grieving. I want to go back to this grief.
Sorry, I'm laughing. What?
I am grieving. Thing? It's interesting that you even saw it, because I think a lot of people would have a goal. If they achieve, most people probably don't achieve the goal, or it's not quite the goal they thought they were going to get. But you actually achieved the thing that you always wanted at a young age and had the foresight to go, I'm done with that. I think that's quite rare.
Oh,
and
thank
it
you.
Must have been, I understand what you mean by grieving, because it's like, I've got to start a new life now.
Yeah.
It's quite interesting that you could see it without, because I'm sure a lot of people would maybe hit that goal and go, right, what's the next one within this chosen quite narrow field?
Mm.
Whereas you went, no, I'm moving field.
Yeah, it's an interesting one because there's also, of course, with dancers, the age thing.
Mm.
So you can't dance forever. Yes, you can teach and yes, you can choreograph. But as a professional dancer on stage, you know, seven nights a week, whatever, you know, there's a finite limit. I mean, I'm saying that, but, you know, there's obviously older dancers there, so it's not a by any stretch. I'm not saying that they're...
No, but there is...
But for the majority of people, they don't get access to...
Like with any sports.
Old,
I see what you're saying.
So, yeah, I kind of... That was probably part of it as well. Mm-hmm. And in terms of, yes, I could have auditioned for other things, but I kind of thought, why?
Yeah.
You know? Like,
yeah.
I've just worked with the most amazing humans and I don't know if I don't want to be disappointed with the next one. Like, if I always kept that to compare to.
I guess
that's something
since,
as well, the comparison thing in life, isn't it?
I guess what must be hard for you now as a DP is that since you first worked with me, that happens on every job now. You're constantly disappointed.
No, that is not true. Shut up.
because, you know, it just must be really hard for you.
No.
But so when you... when you had that grieving process, was film like at the forefront of your mind, or did you have to kind of explore what can I do now?
No, it kind of, the seed was sown a little bit earlier. I kind of had this kind of moment where years ago I got a Gerwood traineeship. I don't know if they still even do these actually, which is through the Arts Council, and it was to work with a film production company that at the time made dance films for Channel 4 and BBC, which doesn't happen anymore. Well, I haven't seen it happen
for a
long time.
Maybe Sky Arts do like a short,
yes, exactly.
Smaller
so
version.
It would be more BBC 4 or Sky Arts. Whereas this was before those channels existed. So I was there and I was a runner and I was cleaning toilets and I was, just kind of doing that kind of thing. And then it was interesting that the production company offered me a job. So I actually left dance for a little bit before.
Right, okay.
And I did, so I went from not knowing, you know, so going from dancing full-time to sitting in an office full-time for 9 hours a day, and I hated it.
Mm.
So I didn't last very long because I was just too full of energy. I can't sit still for any length of time. So I knew that being in an office on the production side of things, like in an office organising, which is, don't get me wrong, one of the most invaluable jobs to us all, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
I personally couldn't do.
Mm.
And I actually then went back to the company that I was working with. Okay. They very kindly took me back. So I came back and then I started dancing. But so the seed had been sown prior.
Right.
And then I also, in between contracts with dance companies, I managed to get funded to make two art gallery installations with dance and film. And I was co-directing them, but I wasn't shooting them. I was co-directing them and I was choreographing them. And then other people were on the camera side of things.
Right.
And lighting side of things. And I'd always had an interest in camera because one of my school friends is a DOP as well.
Right.
And so at the time I didn't really understand what he did, but then I started being introduced to seeing these people mm-hmm. on set and being involved in that process of kind of choreographing for these particular right. angles and blah, blah, blah. And so that's how the kind of seed was sown. And then I started the long process of retraining to kind of then start the second vocation.
Yeah.
But I feel very lucky to have a second vocation.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean? Like
I
don't take that for granted at all, because a lot of people either don't find the vocation, that the passion.
Mm. And a lot of people don't find one of them.
Yeah.
You found two.
Yeah, I feel very lucky about that, because it's, you know, that in my opinion, that's what a job should be. Mm. It should, if you can have a job that is a vocation that you're really passionate about.
Yeah.
Well,
with that in mind, does your job bring you happiness?
Yes, it gets one of the emotions.
Yeah,
of course. Yeah, it gives me great fulfillment. I love what I do.
Yeah,
and we were discussing this earlier. You know, there's things that you get frustrated about, but they're not in the grand scheme of things big enough at all by any stretch of the imagination that would ever make you pack it in.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, every day I feel lucky to do what I do, and I'm very grateful for what I'm doing, and. And, yeah, we do 12-hour days and, yeah, we're running around madly and it's...
Why are you doing such short days? I tell you, when we do this film, you'll be lucky to see a 12.
But, yeah, you know, and we work hard. But, yeah, we were talking about this. You do it because you are passionate about it and you love it and you can't imagine doing...
Yeah, I find it really... It's a weird thing. It's hard to explain sometimes, but yes, there's something about something that you really, really just have to do that even when it physically destroys you, you wouldn't want to do something else somehow. No. Yeah, and it's really hard. John Carpenter said a great thing on an interview once that he was like, I think someone asked him, like, what would you have done if you hadn't made movies? He was like, oh, I didn't have a choice. I fell in love with cinema.
Aww.
I didn't have a choice.
Yeah, exactly.
And I love that. And it's a little, it's easy for him to look back on the career and say that. But I get what he's saying. Yeah. It doesn't feel like there is a choice.
I remember the first feature I did, which is called You Can Tutu, and it was about small ballet dancers at age 11 and their little journey. And I was there wasn't, it was a small budget, smallish budget, I should say. So we couldn't afford a steady cam for all the dance sequences. So I was on a gimbal. Mm-hmm. So I was running around with a gimbal for hours a day.
Yeah.
And I remember every day kind of waking up and kind of feeling like a plank of wood and kind of rolling out of bed and collapsing in a heap and then having to get up and stretch to be able to carry on.
Yeah.
And I came up with a song about sweat running down my back, like, because it was so sweaty and I was sweating so much. But I loved it. I absolutely loved it, you know. And I remember the last day turning to the producer, Nikki Bentham, and saying, oh, I just love my job. I just love my job. And I
drenched,
looked like sweaty. And I wasn't saying that in a sarcastic fashion.
Hunched
I
was over, absolutely drenched meant it. In sweat. Well, I get it. I get that completely. You have a tiny human in your life.
Yes.
Who every day, every picture you put up, I'm like, you've cloned yourself.
Everyone says
this
that.
Kid is your face. Like, his face is your face. It's mad. Because I often don't feel like I see it. You know, people always, you have a newborn, it's all, especially the newborns, they always go, oh my God, he looks so much like his dad or whatever. And I'm like, I don't. They just look like babies to me.
Yeah.
But your son really is definitely your son. Like,
they made no mistake in that hospital. Yeah,
you definitely got the right one. What's that Thank like? You. What's it like having a tiny human?
It's really interesting because, as I'm sure most parents are obviously privy to, they are all encompassing.
Mm.
And so when you're, what's interesting is you don't have downtime when you're home. So you do a full day and then you come home and you obviously want to be there for your child as well. But what it does do is it makes you appreciate every second of the day. Like, I remember lolling around a lot, and now I'm thinking, what did I do with all this time? Like, and I thought I was busy, and I was busy.
Yeah.
But now I'm super busy.
Yeah.
I find it that there's always a sense of urgency now about things. I've got 5 minutes. I can do. You become super productive because you've got like 5 minutes to do anything.
Yeah.
So you're like, okay, I can write that application.
Yeah.
Or whatever. I'm slightly exaggerating, but that's pretty much it. I remember the first couple of months thinking, oh my God, I've actually had time to write 2 emails today, you know, because, you know, especially at the beginning when they are so tiny, you are spending all your time with them. And then, you know, but absolutely, you know, it's talking about happiness.
Yeah.
It is a totally mind-blowing thing.
Why? Why so happy? What is it? Like, as everyone says it, and I believe you.
Yeah.
But it's really like, what is it?
I think it is seeing something that you've created. First of all, that's like mind blowing in itself.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm sure every parent goes, oh my God, I made you. You know, and you kind of, I know that sounds probably blatantly obvious. But for me, that was a very, like, But seeing how they progress in terms of every word that they say, or suddenly they, you know, he was saying, oh, wow, the other day. I'm like, of these things that we just take for granted, that we just do, and they're doing it for the first time. And that's such a joy to watch, you know.
Yeah.
Like, they're just, you kind of go, wow, you've just done that for the very first time, and that's pretty cool. And now you're going to do it forever, and you're going to think nothing of it. That kind of newness and newness of discovery that we all have lost, you know.
Yeah.
Seeing that exploration and that discovery of this small being expanding their knowledge and their horizons their word count.
You get that to some extent with cats, but...
Oh, yeah, cats bring lots of joy.
Yeah, now you need cats in your life.
I need a cat in my life. I need 2 cats in my life. Two Burmese cats, please.
But as yet, even though you say this a lot to me, I see no cat.
Well, the thing is, right, I will say that I can take my small child with me to places.
Yeah.
And cats are less mobile.
So what you're saying is you want a dog?
No.
A small dog in the back.
No, don't want a dog. I'm not a dog person.
Okay.
I am very, very much a cat person.
Yeah. Mm.
So, yes. Yes, they will happen eventually. They will definitely.
You've got to get them cats.
Yeah.
You've got to
get them cats. Well, this is the thing. When we were shooting in the Cotswolds recently, and there were just cats in the houses when we were shooting on location, all the recce's, I'm like, there.
Yeah.
Sorry, what? Stroking this cat. What people are talking about.
There's been a few shoots where a cat will show up and you'll just lose me.
Yeah.
Gabby, you'll always lose Gabby to a cat. Focus Puller Eve will always be lost to a cat. Jason will get lost to a cat.
Oh, Eve, I know Eve. Lovely Eve. Yes, she has 2 cats.
But I like a crew that will get lost to a cat because, sure,
maybe you suddenly should do a feature about cats.
I think they did one. They've done a few, actually. What is your favourite movie about a cat?
I don't have one.
Okay.
I don't, yeah.
You've not thought that through. Mine's Cat's Eye, Stephen King's Cat's Eye.
Oh, I haven't seen it.
Great. It's a portmanteau of three scary stories, and it's they're all
interlinked. Are the cats evil, though?
No, the cat's nice.
Okay, good.
It's like the only nice thing in it. The cat is just sort of a casual observer of these three bizarre, surreal stories. But by the end, the cat's the hero of the whole thing.
Oh, that sounds good, because that's what kind of annoys me about every, well, particularly because I'm reading a lot of stories to my child, and the cat's always the mean, evil one. I know.
Throw those stories out.
I find that always with the films as well. I haven't seen a lot of, well, have I seen any film where the cat's the awesome, affectionate, gorgeous one?
Cat's Eye.
Yes, so I need to see this.
Oh, there must be, but you're right. I feel like there's a real weight in film history towards dogs versus cats, and mm-hmm. dogs seem to come out on mm-hmm. top every time.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, you're right. The cat's like the equivalent of the British guy villain,
evil.
In the polo neck. And it's like, we're not all that evil.
Yeah.
A lot of us are.
It's Scottish. It's a Scottish villain.
Yeah. De Grey Scott, Mission Impossible 2.
Yes, that's right.
And he's a bit cat-like in that. I suppose if you go and see Cats, that'll be...
You mean the musical?
Yeah, but the movie one that's about to come out. That'll be not pleased.
I'm not really, sorry.
Not thrilled about that. That's right, you don't have to be.
Yeah. It's a good wag, I guess, on the stage.
Wag!
I never use that word. Why did I just use that word?
Because of the tail. I used a phrase once that I never use. I find like these phrases, or there's something in my subconscious that goes, don't use this phrase now because it will be hurtful or upsetting to the person that you're about to say it to. And then it immediately comes out of my mouth. So I spoke to my friend. It's like 2 years ago, and she absolutely loves horses. Like had horses her whole life, everything. And she had a horse, and the horse had just died. And I spoke to her on the phone, and she was like, I've had some sad news this week. My horse died. And I was like, oh, I'm so sorry. That's so bad. And we were chatting about the horse and how, you know, it had been really hard. She had to go and have it put down, and the whole family was devastated because it's like, it's a member of the family. I get that. And then she went, anyway, how are you? I'm like, well, I've had a bit of a cold, but I'm healthy as a horse now. Never said that phrase in my life. Why did I? And I was like, oh, I'm so sorry. She's like, why would you say that to me? And because my subconscious is an evil dickhead. Healthy as a horse. Who says that? Like,
at least you didn't say something like, you know, horse lasagna or putting it in ragu or something.
Yeah, no, well, you know, she might like that. But anyway, happy, the big question in this show that is unanswerable is, what is happiness? What is it? And I can't answer it. And you don't have to, but you could take a stab in the dark and see what happens. What is it?
Yeah.
What is it to you?
I think it's easier to kind of discuss why people aren't happy
mm-hmm.
than to discuss what is happiness, I think.
Yeah.
So
in that sense, it is the lack of unhappiness.
Yeah.
Could be happiness. Or is it?
Well, I think because one thing that, you know, everyone wants what they don't have necessarily. I think mm-hmm. it's a human trait that we always think that people have it better than we do, which is not necessarily the case, obviously. But so we're always comparing ourselves to other people, and that's the thing that I think really stops us from being happy with who we are in a present moment. And it's kind of like I'm only just kind of getting my head around being present
mm-hmm.
in the moment and still trying to do that constantly without worrying about mm-hmm. where my next job is coming from or comparing myself to, oh, that DOP is far more successful than me. Why? Or, you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
Absolutely.
God, yes.
Yeah, and or why didn't I get that job? Or, you know, and it's kind of I find myself kind of going, right, you have to be grateful for what you have.
Mm.
Comparatively speaking, you are one, you've had a very fortunate life.
Yeah.
And it's, I think it's that comparison that we all do.
Yeah.
That we need to get rid of, and that's easier said than done.
Obviously. How do you try to get rid of it yourself? Because I could use some advice.
I just stop and go, okay, what have I got right now in this moment? What is good about this moment,
right,
or today? What has happened today that's been magical or enjoyable, or, you know, nice, what did we laugh about today? You know, what was really funny at work?
Yeah.
You know.
It is, yeah, that's really those little things, I think. Yeah. That's really important. And I think it has like a genuine, quite profound effect on how you walk around, probably. Mm. Even just like if you're kind of thinking about positive things from the day, that you probably kind of walk a bit more upright and you carry yourself more confidently, and it probably does all spill into that stuff.
Yeah.
But like you say, it's easier said than done.
It is. I think also because we're afraid a lot of the time, aren't we? Afraid to approach that person for a job, or afraid to kind of promote ourselves, or afraid to, you know, all of that. Oh, what if it? And actually the other day, what's really interesting is now that I have a small child, I don't have time to really worry about whether or not I'm going to email someone.
Yeah, right.
So, and I would use that as a procrastination tool.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Oh, yeah, they might not want to hear it. They might be too busy.
Yeah.
And that that particular day, I just went, well, I need a reference from this person. I'm going to email them.
Is it me?
No, it wasn't actually.
Because I completely missed your deadline.
Yes, it was you. No.
Yeah.
No, it was a woman. It was an exec producer.
Right.
Who, and I just thought, she's probably way too busy. I don't care. I'm just going to send it anyway.
Yeah.
Whereas before I'd go, oh, she's probably way too busy. I won't bother her.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And she got back to me within 5 minutes.
Right, yeah.
And just went, because she's equally busy, so she just deals with things then and there.
Yeah,
so
goes, and also, okay, you may have just caught her exactly the right time when she was checking her emails and had time to do it.
Yeah,
and if you'd have waited and thought about it for 4 hours, she may not have got back to you for a week.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I didn't expect her to get back to me. It wasn't like I was going to be on tenterhooks waiting. actually, in actual fact, I thought, I'll just send it. She probably won't get back to me for weeks. That's cool. But the fact that she did made me go, okay, I need to do this more often, actually, not kind of be fearful of how people are going to react if I approach them,
which is kind of crazy. You definitely shouldn't. You're such an approachable, kind of warm and lovely energy yourself. Why would anyone not want to be approached by you? As someone on the other end of it. But I completely get what you mean. And I similarly, this is where I find the struggle with that kind of thing. And emails is one of those things. Like, a few weeks ago, I had that same thought, like, oh, I really want to email someone about a project. But I hate the idea that they might not get back to me, because then that dream of being able to work with that person is I immediately go, well, that's gone away and now the dream's over, that dream.
Mm-hmm.
And it isn't. If you consciously think about it, you go, no, it isn't, because I'll just try harder. I'll push again and, I'll, you know, whatever. But I did go, I had that exact same thing. Just email them. Just email. What's the worst that can happen? They won't talk to you. Okay, fine, email them. 5 minutes later, I get an email back. By the next morning, I had an email back from, I'd emailed an agent about an actor. By the next morning, the actor had emailed, got in touch to say, let's talk, this is good. And that kind of spurs you on to go, oh, I should do this more often, I shouldn't wait. Mm-hmm. And then you email a bunch of other agents about a bunch of other actors and they ignore you completely for months.
Yeah.
And how do you then not come crashing back down? Because
tenacity.
Because then, to me, that goes, you were right.
No one wants to talk to you. But I think also what's really interesting is like that, the audition thing, you know, and it's that fear of failure, isn't it?
Mm.
So you come out of, you know, I came out of a vocational dance degree and you're spat out into the real world and you have to find a job. And 2% of dancers get jobs. They are not good odds.
No.
And so you kind of have more failures than you do successes. But it's the tenacity of going to those auditions, and the subjectivity of that is very important to remember, because you go, okay, and it's the same with cinematography. My work might not be what they're looking for.
Yeah.
You know, maybe they need, for whatever reason. So and it's the same, it's that subjectivity that comes into it, that you might have had a bad day, they might have had a bad day. I'm talking in an audition scenario.
Yeah, of course, yeah.
Or, you know,
or job interview, scenario, exactly.
It's the same thing, isn't it? And you just you kind of go, okay, that's cool. But then with the one job, one audition / interview that you do get, that can set you up for a long time. And you've got to remember that. So I met you and we did This Is Axiom together.
We did.
And we're still working together.
What a gem it was.
Love that film. I do. But, you know, in terms of the, like, now we have a professional relationship that hopefully will go on for a long, long time.
Yeah.
And it's a set, you know, so it's having the tenacity to keep going, knowing that someone will appreciate and value who you are. And you will meet them.
Yeah.
In a, you know, whether that's in a professional context or some other context. I think a lot of people fall by the wayside, because I've noticed this in particular with particularly gifted people, who everything comes, is just given to them.
Yeah.
So they've never had to fight for anything.
Yeah, yeah.
And so they're just expecting to get it. And then when they don't, that's when they go, oh my God. And they just lose it completely.
Yeah, yeah.
Whereas, you know, people who've had to work to get where they are have the tenacity to keep going much more. That's
Oh, we tried that and we screwed it up. But that's all right, because we'd get up again and we'd try something else. Yeah, yeah, I think that's...
Yeah, and you use it as a learning tool rather than as a, oh my God, I'm so terrible, no one wants me.
Yeah.
The self-pitying tool, you know.
I think a lot of happiness can come from unhappiness in a weird way. Like, I think you can find being happy with pain and misery in an odd way. Like, you can find a way to enjoy that it makes you feel alive.
Yeah, I see what you mean. Yeah.
And enjoy that you can fight it and win. I think there's something about that. I'm not saying that, like, people's pain and misery isn't really awful. And often you can't fight and win some certain things, you know. But I think it does, like, shapes people. It probably makes you stronger in some other ways. And I think, like...
And your happy moments are probably, you appreciate a lot.
Yes, yeah.
Because those moments are heightened.
Some people I've known in the past who put on a performance of continual happiness... I don't believe it for a second.
No.
But
I think you can see it, can't you? You can see straight through it. I know I certainly can. I know I've had that in the past with some of my friends who've been going through terrible relationships, and they're putting, you know, I'm asking how they are, and they're like, yes, I'm fine. And you're no, you're not. I can see that you're not fine.
Yeah.
And it transpires that they're going through some hideous divorce or, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
Or about to go through that or whatever.
That's something really important, I think, of people... Not that people should be like a misery, you don't want, but when you say to someone, how are you? We do, I think it's quite a British thing as well. We tend to go, well, fine, good, yeah, fine, really. I think it's important that we go, if we're not, start telling people. But people do not know how to handle it sometimes, because I do it too much sometimes. How are you? Not good, let me tell you why. And they're like, oh God, here we go. But yeah, I think that whole pretense, I think a lot of people feel like we have to be good. We have to present ourselves as we're doing well all the time. Everything's great. Yeah, come on. Keep going. And then it's often people that will not appreciate darkness end up in the darkest places.
Mm.
I sound a bit like a guru today. I think it's because of that giant meal that I had. It's fed my brain. No, go on. No, you have to now.
No, it's my subconscious saying, don't say that.
That means you should.
No.
You're gonna have to say it afterwards. Yeah. Well, I'm gonna take you back to your hotel so you can sleep because you've got to get up early. What time are you getting up?
Oh, not that early. Okay. I only have to be there at 9:30. It's a luxury.
Oh, fine. Well, I'm getting up at 5:20, so
You need to go home.
I'm gonna go home. Thank you so much for coming in at such short notice as well.
Thank you for having me.
And I will say this, meeting you has made me in my professional and personal life feel very happy.
And likewise.
And whenever we work together, I'm like, great, Caroline's company.
Me too.
It'll be a nicer experience. It'll be more joyful. It'll be like, and also you're such a professional that you go like, oh, we're covered. We don't have to worry about this now.
Thank you so much. What? That means so much to me, Al, and vice versa. Love working with you. Anytime.
Let's do it more then.
Absolutely more.